Welcome to the Brighton Business Show. On today's show, video. How can you use film to better reach your customers? And going up, two very different local businesses pitch their services to our Reverb listeners. Plus the latest news and events from around the city. I'd like to welcome to the first business show of 2018, Voices Old and New. Regular Reverb listeners will remember Laura Evans, who presented the business show until the middle of last year. Laura, welcome back. We're looking forward to hearing what you're doing now.
Hi, it's good to be back.
Brilliant. And a newcomer to Reverb and the business show, and radio, I believe, Helen Cameron. Welcome, Helen.
Oh, hi.
Hi. Helen's a chartered marketer, or is it marketeer? I never know which to say.
Well, marketeer, yeah.
Marketeer. Runs HC Marketing, a very successful business here in Brighton. And Laura, again, great to have you back. How does it feel to be on the other side of the mixing desk?
It's weird, but it's kind of nice because I don't have to look at all the knobs and gauges.
Yes, I'm still completely daunted by them, but I'm doing my best. Great stuff. And what have you been up to?
So I run a company called Let's Talk Video Production, and it's video production and podcasts as well for businesses. So businesses it would be that I mainly work with. I do have a bit of a sports slant with some of the people that I work with as well. So I've done some of the This Girl Can campaign videos because personally it's just that I find that personally interesting. I'm quite
Because you're a bit sporty,
person.
Aren't you? What is it you're involved in? Because I know you left the business show to concentrate on some other activities.
Yeah, so it's really to concentrate on the video business. But as well, I was going through a couple of fight camps last year, which would be the intense period of training before getting in the ring. So you do maybe 6 weeks of that, and yeah, it just made a bit of room for that. Unfortunately, I tore my ACL on my third fight camp last year. Okay. So at the moment, I'm just...
More video than fighting.
Yeah, just doing some like recovery for that rehab.
Oh, that's a shame. But good luck. Hope you come back to health soon and back to the ring. So Helen, can you tell us a bit about HC Marketing and how you help your clients?
Yeah, I basically work with small companies and I help them grow. I help them develop marketing strategies to get them more customers, more sales. And that could involve developing a better website for them, or it could involve just improving their copy, or running social media campaigns. I'm effectively like a marketing director for companies that just can't afford.
For lots of companies.
That haven't got their own marketing department. So that could be anyone from a hairdresser to an engineer, which is great for me because it's always interesting.
Yeah, absolutely. Real diverse portfolio clients. So Laura, let's move on, because what we want to talk about today is the video angle of how businesses can best present themselves to their clients and to the market. And I just wondered why video is becoming more important in businesses, because that's the way it seems to me.
Yeah, I might be slightly biased. But I mean, there's a lot that video can do for businesses. And I mean, it's a great marketing tool. It's very beneficial to your SEO, which is being found in search engines, basically, especially if you're putting your videos on YouTube. It's the second biggest search engine. It's owned by Google. You're going to get some cross benefits there. And also, I mean, you can't, as a business person, you can't necessarily be in front of every client all of the time, whereas video is kind of that next best thing, so they can see a lot about you. People, you know, the saying, people buy from people. There are many benefits to video. There's lots of statistics I could roll off, but
oh,
I might
give
leave
us a couple.
No,
go on.
Sure?
If you've got them at your fingertips, give us a couple of statistics. Don't overload.
By 2019, video will represent over 80% of internet traffic. So that's from Cisco. And there's a lot to say that it's very beneficial to business-to-business type marketing as well. So you see it as a business-to-consumer kind of thing. That's not necessarily the case. So 73% of business-to-business marketers say that video has a positive impact on return on investment. And there's do check out my website and my channel. There's videos and statistics there about the kind of effect that it can have on things like your landing pages and click-through rates and sales rates and things like that. So
it's a good way of getting people to your website and keeping them there once they're once they're there.
Yeah, giving them some engagement. Of course, there's all these different kinds of video that you could be making. So it might be something that is, you try and make a viral video that's quite attention grabbing, or a promo video. But there's also regular vlogging and educational content that people would find useful and come back for again and again. And I kind of think of it sometimes as like if you were writing a blog for your website, and you know the benefits of that, they could be quite similar. And maybe you put a lot of time and effort into the front page of your website and the copy there, and that might be like your promo video, and your blog, which is your regular content, and like interesting kind of content or educational pieces, is like your regular video content as well.
I imagine it's useful if you're facing a global market as well, because people's English language skills might not be as good, and video is a good visual way, obviously, of presenting your information, where written copy has limits for language barriers.
Yeah, and I think, you know, like they say, images can say, is it 1,000 words? Maybe it's more, 1,000,000.
It depends how good the video is, I guess.
But I think that's why it's important to really plan it well and get the branding right on the videos, because of that information you might be conveying, it's got to match what you want it to say.
And Helen, from your perspective, why should videos have a marketing strategy, and what place does video have within an overall strategy?
You have to really think about how you're going to target your products properly. It's all very well having a viral video, but if they're not going to the right people, then it's not actually going to do anything. So you need to put a marketing strategy together to identify the right people you want to go to, and think about the things that you want to get across about your product or service, what's making you unique to another product or service, and you want to be able to push those ideas across. So it's important to think, you know, are you the cheapest, or are you the most expensive because you're the best, and get those ideas across to your actual consumers. And then think about what you're really trying to achieve. You know, you're not just trying to entertain people. What do you want them to do? Do you want to educate them, or do you want to actually sell your product or service? So thinking through how the sale's going to go as well. Finally, you know, if the video is going to actually be on your actual website, you know, you have to have supporting material for it. You can't just have it in isolation. You've got to have lots of supporting material. It's got to be part of a whole campaign.
I often see, you know, a video is just plonked on a website. There's not so much as a caption to tell people why they should be looking at it. It's one of my bugbears. Is that your experience too?
Yeah, you know what mine is that people, and I know it's just about knowledge or time restrictions, that there's a lot of SEO and settings around videos that you can do properly and you're going to get found more. And it's putting all that time and money and effort into making this great video, and maybe these little tweaks that would have made, just give it a little bit of a push, or made a little bit of difference. But I think there is definitely a sense of there's the fun stuff to do when it comes to video, and then there's the stuff that people perceive as like not fun and they don't really want to do that. And I mean, some of the stuff that I've done with clients is coaching as well, or you know, that they enjoy doing the filming and the planning and producing the content, but they don't really want to edit it, because that's a bit of a, maybe to them, a bit of a boring bit. So I could pick that up, because to me it's not.
So there's different ways in which people can use professional video services, and maybe we can talk a bit about that after this tune. I'm going to take you back, this is a perfect tune for this section, if you can bear a bit of late 1970s nostalgia. You're listening to me, Natasha Steele, on the Brighton Business Show, 97.2 FM. That was The Buggles with Video Killed the Radio Star. But to bring us right back to Nat 2018, I've got Laura Evans and Helen Cameron in the studio to tell us how we can get the best out of video in marketing our businesses. We were talking a little bit about social media, but how can we get the best out of social media using video content?
I think it's very flexible in that you can use it across a lot of platforms, and a lot of platforms are giving you the ability to natively upload it, and they're favouring those kind of native uploads to the platform. And, you know, while the track was playing, we were talking a bit about Facebook and I suppose some of the changes they've made recently, and how that's really, in my view, it's punishing a lot of the smaller businesses and the startups and new businesses.
What are those changes? Can you explain them?
So recently, like literally maybe the last couple of days, they've changed the algorithm, and the idea is to show more of your friends and family in your newsfeed, which is great for people that want to see
what people want.
But you can see that that's maybe a bit difficult for businesses. They're making it a pay-to-play platform. So you have to pay to get seen. You have to boost your advertising. It's not your posts even. So these general posts, even if you've got followers, are going to be hard to see unless you've got a lot of engagement. But another recent update they made was that they're punishing people that use this share bait language. So tag a mate if, share if, like if, that kind of stuff. And I can see why they're doing this, and for some people they're like, what a relief. But I can see a lot of my friends who do actually like that content and interact with it, and you know, just because it's a bit shallow. Mm. Yeah, but maybe that's what people go to Facebook for. It's not a museum, it's not an art gallery, right?
Fair enough. Yeah.
I think there's arguments either way there, though. Mm. I can see it from both sides.
Have you seen how this might affect some of your clients, Helen? What sort of impact might it have?
Yeah, I mean, effectively, you have to pay to be seen when this starts. It's actually resulted in a drop in 2/3 of organic postings. So that organic postings are the ones that you don't pay for, because this has already been rolled out in other countries. Mm-hmm. So they are already reporting that. So effectively, really, you are now going to have to pay, really, to be seen on Facebook. Although it makes video even more important, because Facebook will prioritise videos. And so videos will always go to the top of their new Explorer page. So mm-hmm. it means that videos are going to become even more important for small
businesses.
That's
really interesting to know. So what other platforms should people be thinking about in terms of where they put their video? How else can they use the video content they might create?
Well, I know you'll agree with me, so Helen, but it is where your audience is, and you're making video for that audience, not for yourself. So it's not necessarily the platforms you like to use, but it's where they are. Mm. And for me, when I'm producing video, we start by talking about that kind of thing. And I would change the way I would produce something if it was purely for, or if it was very much kind of targeting YouTube audience as opposed to a Facebook audience. So YouTube is a kind of a very audio focused platform, and Facebook is very much visual. They're quite different in there. So I think it's considering where they would be and then producing something that will suit that platform and suit that audience.
Is there any examples you can give me from your own clients that where a particular way of approaching the market worked for them or for your own business perhaps?
Yeah, I've definitely had clients who have a stronger following on Facebook, so we've made videos that were Facebook focused, and then I would always say to people to put it on YouTube as well, because you're going to get the benefit of being on a highly searched kind of search engine. Mm. And again, if you can do all your settings and things right on there, you're going to have some benefit from that. But also, we would tend to make shorter versions for social media. So we'd have these maybe stingers or like 10 to 30 second shorts. And that might be that you've created the short specifically to be short and to just be on social, or you're trying to point them towards, and you know, the Facebook group or the YouTube channel to look at more there, mm-hmm. or just do both.
Yeah, that's the other thing. So on Facebook, you can probably only have 30 to 90 seconds, really. Whereas if you've got a lot more content you want to put in your video, then YouTube is a better place to put it, because on average, you can go from 30 seconds to 8 minutes and people will watch it, whereas they're not going to watch that on Facebook. So that's the other thing to think about.
They're trying to encourage people to put longer videos on Facebook, and when they're bringing in these kind of pre-roll ads that they're going to experiment with this year, it will go on to, a lot of that will go on to longer videos. They're trying to I think give some incentive, but yeah, do people really want to sit there and watch like 15 minute videos on, is that what they expect of Facebook? But I think Facebook's very much about the long game, isn't it? And they're going to try and change the culture that exists to make it fit.
But they also reward the videos that you get to the end of, and that doesn't encourage people to put long videos on, so
It is a complex world, isn't it?
Yes.
And probably a place where it's worth getting a professional involved if you're at the early stages of thinking about video content. In terms of choosing a videographer to work with, what should people be asking? What should they be looking for in someone they might work with?
I think, for me, you can see people's work and you can see the kind of style that they work with. And I always meet clients. I like to meet them face-to-face because I think you should feel relaxed around the person that's making the content with you. If people are anxious, and they're always anxious to some extent when they're doing a video because you've got a camera in your face, right?
But yeah, if you're the business owner and you're featuring or something, it can be a bit overawing if it's not your usual place to be.
It can be a bit scary. And the more you can relax and get into it, the more you can focus on just being a great presenter. And it looks better on camera as well. I would always say to people, don't force an employee to go onto video when they don't want to, because you can tell. And there's a difference between people that go, oh, I'm so nervous, it's so scary, but they're excited to do it, and people who just clearly just hate it and don't want to be there. And that will come across in the video. But I think just giving a lot of information, asking them kind of about how they work. And I always ask people to, if you can find examples of the kind of stuff that you might like, it might be in a different industry, it gives people a bit of an idea of what you want produced. And just to clarify things like your timeline and your budget. And I know that can be a bit difficult, especially if you're trying to work out quotes and...
Yeah, I mean, in terms of budget, is it expensive? Is there other ways of managing cost and getting the best out of your budget?
Yeah, and I think it can be quite varied depending on... There can be a lot of changeable items when you're producing a video. So in terms of location or the kind of equipment that someone might bring, this is why I tend to do a lot of bespoke quoting rather than just put prices on the website. And for some people, you know, there might be cost of presenters or promotion. Do consider the cost of promotion after that. You might want to put some advertising budget behind that. But it can really be as expensive or not quite as expensive as you want. So there's flexibility in that. And you know, there's a difference between something that you might produce that's like TV ad quality and something that's actually is good enough for online, and it, you know, it's a
gets
series.
The message across in a simple way. It depends how glamorous your product is as well. You know, do you just need to be functional and give information, or do you want it to sell a luxury brand or something?
If it's going to be on your website and it's a permanent thing that's going to sell your company, then it's really got to be of a reasonable quality, I would say. But if it's going to be on social media, they're not quite so, it doesn't need to be quite so high, you know.
In terms of production values.
Yeah.
There's definitely a lot that people can do themselves that they'd be surprised at. I think some people, it comes down to a case of, do you actually enjoy doing it? Or would you prefer to just hand over that responsibility? And certainly some of my clients that I work with, they have marketing departments, and they have like a number of people in the marketing department. It's not like a one person band. And maybe they try to make video internally, but it turns out that actually it's a lot more cost effective just to outsource it. There's a lot of learning that's involved with it. It's very time consuming. An outsourcer could actually do it quicker because they do it all the time.
Yeah, interesting.
There's lots of websites now springing up now, aren't there, where you can actually edit online and you can add your headings and do it, or try and do it yourself.
And I heard that it's more valuable to put subtitles on your video content. Do you know anything about that? Because some people do listen with the sound off on their devices.
Well, most people listen with the sound off.
Yeah, there we go.
So particularly if you're in work or something, it'd be not having sound is a real advantage, and therefore you would need subtitles, obviously, to get the messages across.
Yeah, it does make it more accessible to everyone. And also it's beneficial to your search to have those subtitles on there and have it done properly.
Yeah, so just to round off, really, can you just tell us a bit more about how to get that, maximise the distribution or the viewings of your content? they're pointing at each other. This seems to be the bit that's most difficult. Let's each have a go. I'm sure
I think a mistake that I see a lot is that people stick a video up and then go, whoop, it's out there, let it just exist on its own. They will come, I'll build it and they will come, and they won't. You have to put effort into sharing it, like you would put effort into sharing like a press release or something. And you know, this is a great piece of content and a tool. Like, why not share it throughout the year? Or, you know, share it again and again. Mm-hmm. Consider putting some advertising budget behind it, and really kind of push it and promote it.
Excellent advice.
If you've got a lot to say as well, you don't necessarily have to do it as one piece. So maybe cutting it up into smaller chunks as well means it's not just going out as one piece and it can go out as a series. That's if you're teaching somebody or educating somebody on something, then that usually might be a better way to use it.
Oh, that's been brilliant having you both on. Is there anything else we should be talking about with video, or what's coming up? Is there something we should be looking out for that's down the line that we don't know?
Can I plug my channel?
I was going to come to that. You certainly can.
Yeah, please do check out my YouTube channel, which you can... It's probably the easiest way to just go through my website. But I'm posting a lot of videos about video marketing and advice and tips and things like that. So if you want to learn a bit more, just improve the video content that you've already got. And let me know if there's questions that people have or there's content they want to see up there. But yeah, please do subscribe.
And what's your video channel called? How will they find it?
It's best to go through my website, letstalkvideoproduction.com, and there's a icon link at the top of the page.
And that takes you straight through to YouTube.
Yeah.
Perfect. And Helen, how can people find you if they need general marketing help and assistance?
Yeah. They can come to my website, hcmarketing.co.uk, and on there, there's information about how to talk them through putting together a marketing strategy, which they really should do before they actually start doing videos, because they really need to think about what they're actually trying to achieve.
And video may be part of that, but there may be many other things they should be looking at.
Yeah, that's right. But also, in terms of what their video is going to be about and what it's going to do, you can't just make a video for no reason. So, yeah, if you go on there, there's lots of advice.
Super. Thanks ever so much, both of you, for coming into the studio.
Thank you.
Thanks for having me. The Brighton Business Show on Radio Reverb.
You're listening to Radio Reverb on 97.2 FM on digital and downloadable on podcast from Mixcloud and Audio Boom. Here's some news and events from the business community in Brighton and Sussex. Well, we've heard a lot in the news about the collapse of Carillion and the hit that that's had on the supply chain nationally, but closer to home, building firm DMB Solutions has left a lot of householders in the lurch after it was dissolved. As many as 50 of DMB's former customers have complained to Trading Standards that they've been left out of pocket to the tune of thousands of pounds, with work unfinished, roofing projects and major building works completely abandoned. Some of DMB's subcontractors, including Skip Hire Company Greenacre and Seasons Scaffolding, have also been hung out to dry, but rather than add to the misery of DMB's domestic customers, the companies have been rallying round to collect equipment for free and allow them to retain it at a reduced cost. At least some businesses know a good PR opportunity when they see it. And coming up in Worthing on the 1st of February, the Better Business Show features keynote speakers and networking opportunities, all taking place at the Assembly Hall. Find out more on the Worthing and Ada Chamber of Commerce website, which is worthingandadachamber.co.uk. And Victory Fights have been in touch. They've got another event coming up. You might recall we had Kenny Moyston on the show a few months ago. Their latest event will take place on the 26th of May at the Hilton Hotel, and they're looking for sponsorship. So if you want to put your brand alongside this exciting, fast-growing sport, then go to the website. It's victoryfights.co.uk. Brighton & Hove's thriving restaurant scene goes from strength to strength with a new branch of the London Burger Bar Patty & Bun opening up. The company already has 10 London stores and its 11th will be in Ship Street in Brighton, just in case you were struggling to find a burger in Brighton. And if you have a news story for the business show or you want to let people know about your event, email me, natasha.steele@icloud.com, or find us on Twitter or Facebook at Business Reverb. I'd love to hear about your business's contract wins, any awards you've been winning, products you're launching, or anything else you want to share with the citizens of Brighton and Hove. Shortly, we've got Going Up, where two owners pitch their businesses to you, our listeners. Then John Trigg from Freedom Works will tell us about two startup events happening in Hove and Worthing. But first, here's Diana Krall with a song you might recognise called Pick Yourself Up. That was Diana Krall with Pick Yourself Up. And now it's time for Going Up. I've invited two business owners onto the show to tell us what they do. First, they'll do a 60-second elevator pitch, then we'll have a chat to find out more. For anyone wondering what an elevator pitch is, it's a short speech you're recommended to have ready to tell people what you do in an interesting way. The idea is that you might find yourself in an elevator or a lift with that one person who can help you make your million. So it's first into the lift is Eleanor Collins. Eleanor, I won't tell our listeners what you do because that's your job. Are you ready to step into the business show elevator?
Yes, I'm ready.
That's great news. Off you go.
The dance industry is booming. 10 million people tuned into the Strictly Come Dancing final and the Charleston was voted the winning number. 3,000 people searched for Charleston dance classes last month in the UK. Although ballet, salsa and tap are found in every city, the Charleston is not regularly available. Yet this playful dance provides fun and fitness to adults. I'm Eleanor, the co-founder of My Charleston. We have a full range of dance products from regular courses, hen parties, performances and large-scale events. We have successfully grown our business, but our vision is to grow it further by training teachers. We've already trained 4 and have expanded to 5 new cities. We have an incredible 70% retention rate on regular courses, and we have proven our teaching method works. Our offering is unique, as no other brand is exclusively teaching 1920s Charleston. So, if you've ever wanted to dance like a Strictly pro, visit mycharlestondance.com.
Well done, super stuff. How was it?
Yeah, good. It was quite hard to say everything I wanted to quickly say in my lift, but I think I got it through.
We'll have time to find out more shortly, but first I'm going to ask our next guest, Luke Brooks, to step into the business show elevator. Are you ready to go, Luke?
I should hope so.
Step into the elevator and start when you're ready.
So hi, I'm Luke and I run Distinct Blueprint, which is a strategic brand design agency where we help businesses gain a competitive edge within their desired marketplace. I work with small to medium-sized enterprises who haven't yet defined who they are and have little strategy for the future, which often leads to the brand being defined by the marketplace which they're trading within, which isn't ideal as the brand feels undervalued and not living up to its full potential, and they often find it hard to connect with their desired customers, ultimately affecting their growth and revenue in the long term. We help these businesses build brands that express their true value and connect with their customers, giving them that competitive edge over their competition. We create a brand strategy through something called the Blueprint, which forms a foundation for every project. It's a facilitated session where we carry out exercises with the client, which allow us to identify the customer needs, behaviours and pain points, and match that to the goals of their organisation, and also both define and position their brand. We then go away and, depending on the client's needs, execute that accordingly. In short, we help businesses align their internal and external perceptions, resulting in a more valuable, creditable and trustworthy brand, connect them to their ideal customers, building brands that their communities desire and help them to reach their goals.
Great stuff. Thank you very much, Luke. How was it?
Yeah, it's all right.
I would be terrified. I wouldn't want to do this at all. I think you're very brave, both of you. Now, Eleanor, I'd like to find a bit more out about My Charleston. Why Charleston dancing?
The Charleston is a really accessible dance, which is really fun. Although, as I said in my pitch, that you can have any dance class like a ballet or tap class in any city. These are kind of more traditional dances, but this is a dance which is really about expressing yourself and ultimately enjoyment and really just having a lot of fun. And I think that has really captivated people's imaginations, especially with shows like Strictly Come Dancing. You see that it's a really expressive dance and people are really having a lot of joy from dancing it. So we really wanted to bring that to Brighton.
Yeah, I'd love to have a go. Do you need any experience to get involved?
No, absolutely not. I've had lots of people with completely different levels, from people who've never danced before to people who have danced as a child and wanted to come back, and lots of people who've said, I've got 2 left feet, I can't dance, but after a 6-week course, they've mastered the routine. So yeah, we really encourage anyone from all age groups as well.
And how did you get started with this business? It's quite an unusual thing to find yourself doing. So yeah. So specific as well, just one kind of dance?
Yeah, absolutely. So I started working with my business partner, Fiona, about 4 years ago. And she comes from a film background, so she used to work for the BBC. And we both have dance backgrounds. And we really wanted to make an interesting film about Brighton. It's such a interesting city full of character and lots of like wonderful people. So we started doing some research and we found online a project called I Charleston the World. So there was all these different films of people Charleston dancing around their city. So an I Charleston Rome, an I Charleston London. But no one was doing it in Brighton. So we thought we'd run some classes, get people involved. At the end of each 6-week course, that's how we run it. We would take people on location and film them. And this turned into an absolutely huge project with loads of different people wanting to be involved, lots of different dance community is also joining us. And at the end, it took about 8 months, we had a film premiere as such. Wow. And the mayor of Brighton at the time came, and it was really popular, and then it got picked up by local press, by Visit Brighton, the tourist board, then by the Evening Standard, so it gained a huge amount of momentum. Wow. And we weren't actually planning on running any more courses. Fiona at this point was about 7 months pregnant, and but people were asking if we were going to carry on, so we put on another course and that sold out, so we put on another one and that sold out. And we just continue to get asked to do projects, from flash mobs to performances, and it's just kind of grown and grown from
fantastic.
There.
Fantastic. What a lovely story. It's great to hear something just take off on its own like that without so much of the legwork that starting a business can involve. Now, Luke, you're at those early stages with your business, aren't you? Can you tell us how you've gone about setting up your business?
So I'm on my placement year this year. So
so you're based at the university, aren't you?
University of Brighton, at the moment, which they're very helpful, actually. They've got a lot of support. Mm-hmm. And, we've been going through them. They've got their Be Purple, which is their entrepreneurship support service.
Mm-hmm. I'm hoping to have them on in the next couple of months to find out more about what's involved within the university.
Yeah, I mean, they do lots of stuff. They've got free for students and graduates, and they give you ongoing support even after university.
If you were once at the university, you can get support in setting up your business.
You can go
which
back,
is
which
what
is
you've
great.
Taken advantage of. Brilliant.
Yeah, and they hold a number of workshops throughout the year, covering all aspects of business. People from industry come in to talk about what they do. Mm-hmm. They have one-to-one sessions just where you can discuss your business idea, and they sort of give you like business coaching and just general support with like learning soft skills and general things like that.
Yeah, when you say soft skills, what do you mean exactly by that? What kind of things have you needed to hone on when you've thought about setting up your business?
So soft skills are more like the skills that not necessarily relevant to what you're doing. They're more your personal development, but you still need them for business. It's sort of like general skills like networking.
Yeah.
I mean, I've never had a problem with talking to someone once a conversation has started, but walking into a room full of people is absolutely horrible.
Yeah.
Getting over that imposter syndrome, which is like walking in. I'm still working on that, but generally. Other things like communication, planning meetings, even just things like writing an invoice is something that I've had
to learn how to do it for my business. I haven't had to do it as an employee.
When you start at the bottom, it's quite, you have to do all the basic jobs first and
absolutely.
Build up.
And in terms of your business, Distinct Blueprint, what are the main things people need to think about when branding their business or their products or their services? How might they start to approach that?
A big question. lots of ways. I'll probably start with like what the definition of branding is, because a lot of people think it's just a logo, but it's so much more. The definition of brand is a person's gut feeling about a product, service or company. Mm-hmm. It's like the brand philosophies, the values and how the company presents itself. The identity, which a lot of people think is just the brand, is the logo, the colour scheme, the imagery, and it's what customers use to relate an experience to a company, sort of like the signature at the end of a letter, with the brand being all the parts inside. Advice I give is probably define who you are, and most importantly, why you're doing what you're doing. Mm-hmm. And if you can express that effectively, people relate to that, if it's similar to how they want to be seen or how they want to feel. People are drawn to things they identify and relate with. We're friends with people that have similar interests. If you want to create a brand that your customers want to relate to, then it's probably as well, know your customers very well.
Mm-hmm. Brilliant. And you've already worked on a couple of projects for different clients. Can you tell us a bit about those?
Yeah,
the kinds of things you've already done?
Yeah, probably the two main biggest ones. We worked actually with Be Purple, actually, mm-hmm. which is quite interesting. They needed help with their marketing efforts for this year and to raise awareness of the brand. So we conducted a blueprint strategy session to find their brand and understanding more about their customers they serve. In this case, it was students and graduates. We created brand and marketing collateral for them in the form of a 28-page A5 magazine. It was crammed full of case studies, workshop dates, competitions, and useful tips and advice. We also created banners that we placed in high footfall locations across the campus. I don't know if you know, but the University of Brighton is all across the city. So
right.
it's quite difficult getting the message out. So that's what we had
to do.
So
you need to link it up across all the different sites and make a coherent message.
That was one way we decided to do it. It was good, actually, in the end. Somehow, I don't know how we managed it, but we got a 304 increase in one-to-one bookings, and we doubled their email subscribers, and so far all the workshops have been oversubscribed, so that was pretty impressive.
Well done. Great stuff.
Yeah, I don't know how we managed that. But
so, Ellen, how about you? What was the hardest part of starting your business, and what kind of support did you need to access? Not starting it, but managing it once it was already off and running.
Yeah, so we started the business very much as a lifestyle business. So I was working full-time. Fiona was freelancing, doing a lot of film work, as I mentioned before, having a baby. So we were really juggling my Charleston alongside of this, and it just got to the point that we realised that we needed a lot more support if we were really going to take it forward. So last August we applied for Entrepreneurial Sparks, which is a business accelerator programme which is funded by NatWest, and we were accepted onto a 6-month programme which we are currently in the middle of. And being part of that accelerator programme really did do exactly that, accelerate us to a new level. So we were teaching 3 courses a week, and now we have 8 courses. We've expanded outside of Brighton into Lewes, Worthing. We've just launched in Portsmouth. We're also starting on the Isle of Wight in February, and we've launched a lot of different products as well. So we now have workshops, so 3-hour sessions where people can come and learn to dance. And we've also kind of honed in on doing large-scale events. So we're doing events with bands, evening performances, and we've also just confirmed that we are doing a 1920s afternoon tea at the Hilton on the 24th of February.
Ooh, that sounds lovely. So is there anything else you've got coming up that you'd like to tell our listeners about?
So once again, we're going to be part of the Brighton Fringe. So we have a My Charleston speakeasy on the 5th of May. But the big thing that's coming up, is the 1920s afternoon tea on the 24th of February. So it's going to be afternoon tea with a chance to learn to dance. We have some Charleston dancers going to be there as well performing, and we have some live jazz as well.
Wonderful. Where can people find your business?
So the best place is online. So our website is mycharlestondance.com. And if you want to email me, just drop me an email at hello@mycharlestondance.com. And we're also on Facebook, Twitter and Instagram.
Perfect. And I'll be making a post on our Twitter account at Business Reverb that'll include the contacts for both these companies. Thanks very much. And Luke, where can people find your business?
Probably the best place is online. We've got a website, which is www.distinctblueprint.com. At the end, there's all the contact page with all the information on, but we've got like an email, contact@distinctblueprint.com. Also by phone, 01273 93 1618. And we haven't actually got a physical address of yet, but hopefully in the future we'll get one.
That's great. Thanks ever so much, both of you, for coming on. What fantastic
businesses.
Thank
you for having us.
Really enjoyed hearing about them.
It's great.
Thanks. So that was Baby Don't Hurt Me from Postmodern Jukebox, chosen by Eleanor from My Charleston. And I'd like to welcome my final guest on this month's show, John Trigg from Freedom Works. John, welcome to the business show.
Morning, Natasha.
Great to have you on. Now, the first thing I really need to ask is, what is Freedom Works?
Freedom Works is a co-working and flexible community space, which is open to sort of freelancers, startups, small, medium sort of sized businesses looking to grow.
And have you been open long?
We opened up originally, or we started 18 months ago. We opened our first space in Worthing in September 2016, and we were lucky enough to grow that and open up our second space, which is in Hove, which we opened up in late September, October last year, 2017.
So what kind of working space do you provide at Freedom Works? Because it's a bit different from renting an office, isn't it?
Absolutely, yeah. So, I mean, different to sort of serviced offices or long-term leased offices, the key thing is that people don't take a lease out or don't take a licence out. They come on board as a member, and a member can be there for a day. They may turn up once, never turn up ever again, or may turn up on an ad hoc basis. Or a member might be a sort of a dedicated member that has 24/7 access to the space, but they're always on a 30-day rolling sort of agreement. So they're not locked into any long-term sort of binding sort of contracts. So the key fundamental thing with a co-working space is it does exactly what it says on the tin. It's a co-working space, and we encourage sort of collaboration. So unlike sort of your traditional sort of commercial office layout where they're trying to maximize square footage, what we do is we allocate a fair amount of space to communal space. So we spend a lot of energy and effort in kitchen, you know, and the sort of the sort of breakout areas, which obviously encourages people to sit there and chat. And then we provide a combination of private offices, because there's still obviously a requirement for confidentiality, yes, and teams working sort of privately, and open plan. And then within the space, you create sort of little nooks and crannies and phone booths where when people that are working in the open plan can go and do a sort of a private call. But the design is very much built at getting people talking with each other, chatting with each other.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like it's a networking environment within itself. It's more than a bit of office space. It's more than a desk to put your computer on, even. It's a community, isn't it?
It is absolutely. Yeah, I mean, and you know, we if I look at Worthing, which is our longest going co-working space, I mean, we've got nearly 200 members at Worthing. And within that community, and we did this sort of research at the back end of last year, but we'd created it wasn't the co-working space that created, the members created it, but the co-working space I genuinely believe facilitated 10 jobs were created through all the members there. We created four apprenticeships. The members within there created four apprenticeships schemes. And one of the things that I've been really surprised about is the amount of collaboration. So we've got marketing agencies that can walk around the corner and chat to Dave, who's a web designer. So traditionally that marketing agency wouldn't have an in-house web designer. Well, they do now. Mm-hmm. We've got accountants that are working there that, you know, obviously this time of year, January, everybody's having to file their tax returns. They can go and chat to Cole, the accountant, and ask him, you know, what do I need to do about, you know, R&D tax sort of credits. So that collaboration's really benefited
the
community.
It's very organic in a way. It's a very organic business community that sort of servicing itself, if you like, within the business.
It is, and we that's naturally happened. And again, it's just logic, you know, that you've got the majority of the businesses that we have will range from an individual freelancer to maybe, you know, some of the bigger businesses may have 8 to 10 members of their team, but traditionally those size businesses don't have all those services available. So you don't have a solicitor on hand, you don't have an accountant on hand, you don't have a HR specialist on hand, you don't have an SEO specialist on hand. Well, if you're all working under the same roof, you do, and therefore that naturally generates that sort of collaboration and sort of, you know, support work with each other, which, you know, which benefits them.
Yeah, now you yourself have a background, you know, your previous business life was in digital technologies, and is it technology that's driving these new ways of working? Is that what's making it possible?
Not necessarily. I mean, I think what's changing is people's attitudes. I mean, who wants to sit on a train for an hour a day to go to work and then another hour to come back? And I look at my kids and I just think that they will not be doing that. You know, we have emails on our phones. We have cloud, you know, where we can work from anywhere. And I think, you know,
we have a broken train network.
We have a broken train network, which is for me, it's good, because obviously, you know, we're trying to encourage, you know, our mantra, genuine mantra, is I want to create a network of spaces where homegrown talent stays at home. Why should you have to go more than 20 minutes from where you sort of, you know, where you live to where you work? So I think attitudes are definitely changing. And one of the things that I've been surprised about is, you know, my initial thought process is that we would appeal to independents, freelancers, small startups, sort of small growing businesses that are open-minded to working in collaborative open spaces. Well, we're actually now finding that some larger companies are open to it.
Yeah, I was going to ask you that, because it seems to me that if you've got a big office in London but your staff are scattered around and they've got family commitments or other or transport difficulties, as we've seen so magnificently in the last year in Brighton Hove, that it's worth their well-being members so that their employees can work wherever they need to.
Yeah, yeah, and we've already started to see that. So more and more of the larger sort of companies, so, you know, there's a number of sort of large insurance companies to even sort of, you know, your likes of KPMG's and Price Waterhouse, where, you know, they're now shrinking their office space, providing hot desking and encouraging people to work from home. Now, working from home isn't necessarily conducive for everybody, because you might have you might have your kids there, you might have other distractions,
space limitations.
So we've seen, you know, a number of people that come in and use the space on an ad hoc hot desking basis are those, you know, people that will be working up in London. And obviously, as you've mentioned, you know, the Southern Railway hasn't been great in the last year, and I mean, even, you know, the forthcoming October, they're closing the Brighton to London line down for a week. Where are those people going to work? Yeah. So that's where we've sort of benefited from. But on top of that, we've got local large employers, so people like Southern Water, who are, what they don't want is, they don't want long-term leases, they don't want fixed costs in their P&L line. So flexible working is, A, that's taking that sort of fixed cost off their P&L. But fundamentally, it's getting their staff working in a creative, energetic environment where, you know, they get more productivity and benefit out of working.
Yeah, now you've got some interesting events for start businesses that are in the startup phase at both Hove and Worthing, is that right?
Yeah, we do. So we've got a startup initiative week, which is starting the week commencing the 29th of January. It's very informal, it's very loose. So both spaces, both Worthing and Hove are in effect open. We're opening our doors up. Anybody that's starting up a business, has even started up a business but is working from home, is more than welcome to come in and use the space for free. We've got a series of talks on each of the days from outside people and also members. So we've got people that have got the experience of starting a business up, just to talk through the practical issues. We've got a bank coming in to talk about how banks should be helping and what, you know, is available. We've got marketeer talking about, you know, cost effective online marketing and how to plan your marketing as a startup with limited budget. We've got a web developer coming in and talking about, because obviously, you know, you're most people now with a startup business, it's your website, and, you know, unless you're come from that sort of background, it's a little bit of the unknown, and you have somebody there that can talk about, you know, what you can do, you know, how you can do it cost effectively, how it can work for you. So we've got a series of people sort of coming in and talking, and again, it's an open house, and the objective very much is to you know, provide a bit of support and, you know, show people that, you know, there's some like-minded souls out there that can you know, share of knowledge and
brilliant,
help.
And so if people want to take part in those free sessions and the workshops and or want to be a member of Freedom Works or find out more, where can they go?
Simple, you can go to our website or you can give us a call. So our website's probably the easiest thing. So it's am I allowed to provide our website address?
Please do.
Yeah, cool. So it's super simple. It's Freedom Works, as in freedom and works, dot space, which is the written space, SPACE. And if you go on there, you'll find our telephone number. We've got a wonderful community manager in Hove, a lady called Jo, and equally we've got a wonderful community manager in Worthing, a lady called Bethany. You can call and speak to either Jo or Bethany, or you can we've got a sort of an inquiry or contact form on the site for you to message. But or just turn up, just rock up and come in and sit down and plug and work.
Great stuff. Thanks ever so much for coming on the show, John, telling us more about Freedom Works. And that's it for this week. Thank you to all my guests, Laura Evans, Helen Cameron, Eleanor Collins, Luke Brooks and John. If you'd like to get featured on the business show, contact us through the Radio Reverb website, radioreverb.com, or on Twitter and Facebook at Business Reverb. Never had pain, never had, and for no more.
Superman.